Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
We're glad to have with us for his monthly meeting and the December one at that. Our Erie County Executive, Brenton Davis. Merry Christmas, Brent. Good to see you, sir.
Hey, good to see you.
So, all right. So, what's Christmas like in the courthouse? This is your first Christmas. Is there a tree somewhere, or you know, stockings hung by the courtroom with care?
Well, I mean, it's funny you mentioned Christmas. You know, it just brings to mind the Erie Reader article that was calling me Ebenezer Scrooge. So. I kind of found some comical, our local Democratic chairman, you know, doing what he does best. I just thought that was funny, but apparently he's not so good at reading because Ebenezer ends up being the hero of the story anyway.
He buys the biggest goose in the window, right?
Right. You know, that's how it goes. Well, our Christmas goose is coming, Joel.
Is it right? Okay. Are there any traditions? I mean, you should see the governor's residence. I mean, they've got the Erie room all decorated. And
yeah,
stuff.
So the employees kind of take care of their spaces, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of festivities and a lot of the office people, they take pride in doing what they do. I'd say the big thing that we did, as I was most proud of, is the staff. You know, we've got the kids in OCY that are in county custody, and these kids, they just go through some horrific stuff. And we do a gift drive, you know, and make sure. So, I mean, we actually were able to cover down on all these kids to make sure. So all the county employees got together and made sure all the kids, I mean, hundreds of kids of all ages, from infants to 17, 18 years old, that have something under the Christmas tree in their foster homes. I mean, I was proud of that, you know. The staff really stepped up and took care of those kids. So, I mean, to me, that's something to be proud of. You know, I'm real proud, and, you know, it's just nice to see people that come together for, you know, the little ones in need.
That's a strong demonstration of generosity. And when you consider, you know, these kids are already in a tough situation being under the ward of the government, as a ward of the government, that's really remarkable that the government employees stepped up to.
Oh, absolutely!
To help them
I thought we'd have to issue a press release and, you know, kind of engage the community, and it didn't even get that far. You know, we just sent it out through county email.
Wow!
And said, here's the link to it, and I mean, a couple of days later, I mean, all the kids were taken care of.
Beautiful.
I mean, it was it's a beautiful thing.
One of the things that also comes with December is budget time, and you've been in the news for that quite a bit. So the council, the administration generates the budget. Council reacts to the budget with all their action items, and now it has been your turn to react to council with vetoes and things. First off, tell me a little bit about where are you at with this budget process. Do we get most of it right?
Well, I mean, first off, I'd say I don't react to anything. I respond.
Okay, but, there you go.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, I think something like the Times News, you know, the headlines, a lot of folks, you know, we've been getting some feedback, you know, oh, I expected fiscal conservatism, and this budget's costing us another $433,000. Well, it's just another prime example of the Times News sniping the headlines of what they want to direct the attention to. You know, and I posted on my social media, I believe yesterday, where I corrected the Times News headline for them, and it should have read, Davis administration vetoes save taxpayers $4.4 million with no tax increase. And that's the reality behind that, is they want to talk about only certain line items from the general fund, that $433,000. And it's not like I'm asking for an additional $433,000, you know. It's the disparity between the two. So take, for instance, seems like their hot button issues, my travel. So take the $25,000 for the year that we requested for the administration travel. You know, they want it to be 15. So there's a disparity of 10. So either way, it's automatically going to cost you 15, whether it passes or not.
Right.
So we're not really talking about $433,000 additional. I mean, out of all these line items that include positions that they attempted to eliminate that actually have people in them, or free positions that are funded through the state and DHS dollars. You know, so to me, it's there's a lot of things that I think they were trying to eliminate that they didn't just understand due to just being part-time. You know, they're not there day-to-day, and that's not all a members of council. I mean, we've got one or two activists and maybe another one that's absolutely clueless. But beyond that, we've got at least four members that are solid, that understand the day-to-day operations, and, you know, they really are interested in the best interest of the county government. So, I mean, you look at the budget itself. I mean, we're really arguing over maybe $75,000 total out of 600 plus million.
That's what's really in contention, yeah, is 75 grand?
Total, out of all those 11 line items. I mean, if you take what they're allowing to pass already and what I'm saying the increases should be, mm-hmm. you know, it's really not unreasonable. You know, I mean, there's some folks that are critical over that travel line item, and I was told by other county executives and commissioners, like, hey, they're gonna nitpick the little stuff. Well, they weren't kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking, we're arguing over $10,000 out of a $600 million a year budget. And the irony is the same folks that argue about this particular line item are the same ones that'll willy-nilly throw millions of dollars at initiatives that aren't proven, that don't have the data. I mean, it makes no sense. You're arguing over $10,000 travel line item, and then you want to give Savakio Park $750,000 of ARPA money.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that the Times neglected to talk about. All the vetoes of all this ARPA money that one individual of council is attempting to slide through based on politics. You know, and it's and the irony is, it's the same individual that's been critical of all of our American Rescue Plan initiatives this entire year, claiming lack of detail, lack of transparency, lack of this, lack of that. It's like it was just never good enough, despite the fact that even Project Resolve fell short of an EDA grant at the federal level. Mm. Like, it's probably the best proven project and initiative that's out there. So, I mean, to me, it's just, it's the double standard that exists. It's a double standard here with the media. It's the double standard with these few obstructionists on council. You know, it's rules for me, but not for thee, you know, and there are rules for thee and not for me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, to me, it's just, if anybody out there watching this can't see the blatant hypocrisy and just the political activism that's taking place. And the sad part is the only one it's going to cost is our community, mm-hmm. you know? And to me, I think that's why the voters have an opportunity to see what's going on. And I'm excited for 2023 because all these individuals that are obstructionists, they're on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk through some of these vetoes here. The first one is from the gaming fund budget. You're vetoing 30 grand in gaming funds for Mecca. You're saying that the organization is not up to date with 990 reporting and that their record of accomplishment is delivering services is poor. Where do you base that on?
So previous controller, county controller investigations and reports.
Okay.
So, I mean, like anything, I don't go looking for this stuff. I mean, this stuff finds me. You know, when you hold this seat, I mean, it's like you come in every day and there's packets of information delivered from all corners of the globe, it seems. And you got to just kind of sift through it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's in the 11th hour. And then you kind of start looking at the who's who and how this money's all connected, you know. And I mean, there's a lot that goes on in this town, you know. And I think that's why I draw the fire that I do from certain entities. It's the ones that stand to profit are the ones that make the noise,
yeah.
You know, and those days are over. Like, I'm not politically connected to anybody, you know, and I don't have a single relative here in Erie County that can even vote for me, let alone give me money, you know. So I don't play favorites. I look at the past performance, and, you know, this budget was really educational for me because it was the first time I got to see the process firsthand all the way through. So, I mean, we'll be better at it next year and more prepared. I've already changed the way the grant process is going to work, and I've also already changed the way the grant process is going to be holding these organizations accountable for their reporting.
And the budget includes the grant line items and the regular line items too?
Correct.
Okay.
So that's every dollar that county government spends, as we projected to spend, is in that budget.
Because that's what was the brouhaha last time, was the grant numbers, and you said, well, they get money out of the general fund, and they're asking, mm-hmm. they're double dipping into grants.
Yep.
I want to go, before I have to take a break, I want to get through a couple more things. You mentioned travel lines, both for the county executive and the economic development. Now, you've started an economic development department.
Mm-hmm. So it's fully staffed.
And that started recently within your tenure, right?
I mean, there wasn't one. So not only did we create it, but then I put two individuals. So we have an executive director of economic development, an individual we brought out of Buffalo. Has got a lot of experience in this field, decades. And then we've got a assistant director, you know, and then obviously we've got the Fusion Cell folks, the GIS coordinator that we hired. These are all different things that we've done to kind of give economic development, GIS, the geo informational systems. It's, you know, putting essentially data onto a map so you can see it.
The Fusion Cell is that connection with the inclusive playbook, right?
Well, not necessarily the playbook. I mean, the playbook, that's a whole nother story.
Okay.
But so the Fusion Cell, what that is that's actually our outreach, number one, to the townships, because the townships in these smaller towns and boroughs in the city of Cory are predominantly have been left out of the conversation. So what that is a community liaison that works directly with these townships to help them flesh out their projects, to make sure that everybody in Erie County has, number one, that representation, but that link to county government, but also the state and the feds.
Isn't that what the COG does, though, kind of?
To a degree. So the COG is...
I mean, is there not duplication there with
no.
with Jessica?
So they have different missions.
Okay, go ahead.
So we belong to the COG. So mm-hmm. that's a council of government. So that's kind of... So there's a lot of things that the COG does. Like they spend the time on, say, like the 911 studies and the EMS plan. You know, like, so we kind of help drive the COG with, you know, obviously where the biggest funder,
yeah.
Biggest partner. We house the COG in planning, so they're an integral part of what we do. It's just kind of like another gear. So where they spend time with, I think, the policy side, and they help kind of iron out specific issues, like the Fusion Cell and that community liaison is really focused on the American Rescue Plan,
okay.
You know, where... The COG would say, hey, they're doing the broadband study. That's like their big thing right now. Well, we don't worry about the study itself. What we really focus on is, say, there might be a bridge project, or there might be broadband money or water sewer projects or an economic development, a brownfield, whatever it is in their community, it's their specific need. You know, we're able to coordinate that. Or take, for instance, even something as simple as the trash that shut down out in Union City. You know, and a couple of these municipalities when Raccoon Refuse went under, you know, it was that Fusion Cell. We got on the horn and said, hey, what do you need? Let us help you, and then kind of help them make the arrangements they need should they need it. You know, so it serves a different role, but then it's also upward and outward. You know, our Fusion Cell works with other county commissioners and county executives in the tri-state region to make sure that we have a regional approach to the asks that we're making. So now it's not only, you know, Senator Toomey, Senator Laughlin, Congressman Kelly. It's not only those representatives fighting for our interests. Well, now we have senators and congressmen from New York State, senators and congressmen from Ohio, that if we're full court press, now we've got 7 or 8, 9, 10 different federal elected officials running the ball for a project that's mutually beneficial for all of us.
So who did this kind of work before we established an economic development department within the county administration?
There wasn't one. There was nobody doing this work. That's the point. I mean, that's been my argument since the very beginning. So we didn't have this. I mean, I think de facto, I think, you know, the previous administration's answer was, whether it was a lack of understanding of economic development or just not an appetite for it, you know? I mean, every executive and every administration has a different flavor. You know, it's no secret. I mean, Kathy's thing was wellness, you know, the blue zones and all that stuff. Well, that doesn't create jobs. So, I mean, to me, it's not that it's not a viable thing. Everybody likes wellness. But, you know, if you can't put food on the table, you're not really concerned with how you're eating. So, I mean, to me, I think a lot of that kind of got shoved out the door, and they spent money with the chamber and just kind of expected the chamber to carry the ball. And you look around the country to all these other county governments that are successful. I mean, the chamber plays a role, but it is not the economic development gear for the entire county, you know, and that's what we've been missing. You know, we've been putting a lot on these folks' backs and just being like, well, what are you doing? You know, you have right. the chamber, you have the MBA, and they're there to represent their members. They're there to represent those businesses. But at the end of the day, they can't make the official decisions of government, you know, so they're very limited. They're only empowered as far as the government strokes them a check, mm-hmm. you know, to do that work. So, I mean, I think that's just where we've gone wrong. I mean, you have to have a true understanding of what economic development is, what it's supposed to be, and then have that long-term vision to get the ball there.
Brenton Davis, the Erie County Executive, is our guest here on a Tuesday for his December monthly meeting. And Executive Davis, let's go back to the vetoes here and reduction in professional fees. We're talking about like lawyers, or what are we talking about with that?
That could be anything. So in terms of like economic development, it could be maybe you need legal research for something. But I'd say more likely it, with this American Rescue Plan money, these professional fees are there, as we charted it, for more or less assistance to these smaller municipalities that can't afford, I mean, say a lot of projects, there's matching dollars out there, but you've got to take care of the engineering costs. Or mm-hmm. maybe there's a grant that takes care of the engineering costs, but maybe not, you know, operational costs or whatever. You know, and as all these different funding sources come down, you've got to have the money and the flexibility to be able to help out where you can. Let's take, for instance, a economic development project that we're working on now out in Northeast. You know, we've got a New York company that's purchased some land that we've attracted, looking to bring 250 jobs out to a Greenfield Township. But, you know, they're having trouble with their septic. You know, they would have to use, for the size of the industrial building and the employees that they'd have, their septic system on lot. And we're like, why on earth should you spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars? Well, let's look at what the investment would be to bring sewage and yeah. water out there. If you can get septic and water out there, well, now you just opened up the entire 90 I-86 corridor, you know. And by doing that, that's how we can attract. I mean, the more that New York State becomes more, I guess, less friendly
less
to businesses,
friendly, yeah.
you know, the more they're looking to vacate. And I mean, this business's response to me is they saw the way the tides turned in Erie County. And they're like, you got elected, you know, we want to come. Mm. Let's see what we can do.
Well, look at Triplite going to Knowledge Park. That was a big get.
That's a big deal. And that's just one of many, you yeah. know. And you look at what's going to happen with Project Resolve. You know, we need to set the table ahead. I mean, you know, these professional fees, these travel fees, all this stuff is just an estimated cost of what we could spend. It's a budgetary number. It doesn't mean we're going to spend it, but it's
there.
You have
some kind of opportunity funding, too, that you wanted? That was that 100K that dropped to 20K?
So that would be to support, like,
line, yeah.
So that would be, say, for instance, here would be a good example. So let's look at the Union City Chair site. Mm-hmm. You know, Union City Chair, you know, obviously it burnt down, you know, part of the sites are sitting vacant. The True Temper building's still vacant. I mean, it's just basically fallen in on itself.
Yeah.
You know, these folks in these communities got to look at these places and say, like, my goodness, like, this is my community. I mean, it looks disinvestment. I mean, it's in, you know, broken windows theory. It attracts, you know, poor types of behavior and crime and things of that nature. But, you know, we had an opportunity to purchase this property, you know, for $100,000, you know, and for a taxpayer investment, $100,000. Now there's going to be some substantial cleanup there, which we would go and get brownfield money and work through the redevelopment authorities and, you know, get these grants to take care of it. And that is how you do economic development. You take something that's an eyesore in your community, you rectify a problem, you get together your capital stack from all your different, you know, financial resources, and you fix a problem and build something that's going to drive your economy and create jobs.
But just so that I understand, wouldn't something specifically like that be handled by the Erie County Redevelopment Authority or the Corey Redevelopment Authority. I know that piece of property, right?
So that's the mechanism that you would want to do it through, but they're not sitting on money to just do those types of things. So the whole point was, is this very particular site, you know, we could have got it for $100,000, you know, and Tina Mangine and I from the redevelopment, we got together and she's like, heck yeah, I can get it. She's like, get me $100,000. Well, look at the months and months and months and months of hoops that you got to jump through to make a $100,000 decision that could have been a multi-million dollar, still could be a multi-million dollar return for the community of Union City. And you know, Erie County as a whole, because, I mean, you create jobs can go anywhere. But the reality is sometimes in business, you got to strike when the iron's hot. So by the time, I mean, this guy agreed to sell it to us for $100,000. Tina was ready. Redevelopment Authority was ready. By the time we went through council and jumped through all those hoops, well, we need another month. Well, we need, you know, I mean, it just, by the time that you can get anything together, well, the guy changes his mind and now he wants more money. And, you know, I mean.
So where's it at right now? Because I got to go to break.
Pretty much that's where it's at. It's just sitting in limbo. It's a missed opportunity.
What's the price tag on it?
Well, hard to say now because it's that deal kind of went and passed.
But I guess I'm having my hard time wrapping my arms around who can make those trigger decisions. Obviously, government doesn't run the way that a private real estate developer could run.
That is why having an economic development department that's funded is so critical.
But you're saying that you want like a land bank or some kind of rainy day fund to buy stuff with?
We already have that. I mean, that's what the Redevelopment Authority is for. But you've got to be able to transfer funds in order for them to fund a specific project.
Yeah.
You know, to me, so any kind of initiative, I mean, it could be anything. It could be anything, maybe a local festival or fair or somebody that just fell a little short on something, or you're like, hey, yeah, this could be a seed for something bigger. It gives you that ability to help those initiatives along.
Right now we're talking about, I called it, you have a fistful of vetoes. It's almost like fistful of dollars, but it is more civil and back and forth. By the way, before we get any further, what is the council's role now to deal with your 11 vetoes?
So they need a super majority to override that
like
veto.
6-3?
So it'd have to be five. So
five.
They would have
to,
because there's only seven on council.
Got it.
So realistically, I mean, is all I need is three votes to support me, and
it's
over.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so that's how that works. We've been talking through some of these line items from these vetoes, and I've gotten now to the positions. Kind of talking about the economic development. So there's elimination of a human resources position that is involved in, a DEI position, or where is this HR position?
Yeah, so what we did is we had a DEI specialist that ended up going to National Fuel. So what we did is we combined positions at DEI position and recruiting, you know, because, I mean, to me, when I came into office, you know, obviously, DEI is a thing that's, you know, it's trendy, it's important.
Diversity,
equity,
and inclusion.
You know, and that's the steps that, you know, we're just trying to make in society to make sure things are diverse and equitable, inclusive. You know, nothing wrong with that. But I told them, I said, there's not enough work, you know, for a DEI person. And that, like, a lot of folks don't realize that we're not out here trying to solve society's problems with this DEI person. What we're trying to do is have an internal lens to look in county government and make sure that are our hiring practices, are they diverse, equitable, and inclusive? Or, you know, is the process for advancements and things of that nature, you know, are we being aware of any potential biases, you know, for gender, race, whatever.
Kind of being the champion within the building.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even call it just a champion. I mean, to me, like I said, I mean, we did a DEI survey that was paid for before I got here, but I still chose to participate in it as the executive, and we did it. And, you know, the numbers came back, I mean, very positive. You know, the consultants, you know, they're like, I mean, you guys are doing what you need to do. Like, what's your focus? And that's something we're still working on. But the main thing about this is, as I said, look, you look at how county government looks as a whole. And my goal for them was, I was like, I want you to spend extra time in these low income socioeconomic challenge demographics and communities. So we really spent time doing a lot of job fairs and like the community centers. I was like, I really want you to go where, I mean, turn over rocks in areas in which we never have before and spend our time there, you know? So, I mean, they do get out into the community across everywhere in Erie County, but I told them specifically, there's a demographic of folks that are typically not offered the opportunity or even aware that you can come to work for county government. I was like, that's where I want you. So, I mean, like, we're down on the Lower East Side, West Side, down in the cities. We're in the community centers. You know, we're out in Cory. We're out everywhere. But that was the purpose, is I gave them that recruiting mission.
Yeah.
So let's offer this opportunity for these entry-level jobs for a lot of these young folks that are 18, 19, 20 years old, getting out of high school, saying, hey, listen, go to these schools. Let them know you're 18 years old, you graduate, you can get an entry-level job with benefits and a pension right here in county government. Wow. So, I mean, to me, that was the purpose of it. You know, I don't think they really understood that somebody was manning that position. So, like I said, that's the danger sometimes of a part-time council. You've got $600+ million in line items, and it's even hard for me to understand, you know, I mean, without specifically looking at each line item, figuring out what it is. But if you're not in this day to day, I mean, I believe that they'll vote with this veto, you know, just because it is somebody in that position, you know. So it's an important role. It's something that we need. And I would hope that nobody's intentionally voting against, you know, our DEI person.
Another position that that was eliminated, that you've overridden, the elimination of a deputy director in tax revenue.
Yeah, so that was something that our folks asked for, and, you know, we're one of the few places that doesn't have it. You've got smaller counties in Pennsylvania that have this position, you know, and, I mean, you got to look at the workload. I mean, anybody that's ever owned a business, you know, me as a carpenter or a contractor, I think of, if we're going to shovel gravel, and you've got dump trucks of gravel coming to a job site that you have to maybe wheelbarrow into a basement or something, you understand the value of manpower. I mean, anybody that's ever tried to spread gravel in their driveway with one person and a shovel, you know how painful that is, and you'd wish, man, if I could only get 25 guys over here, this would go quickly. Well, it's the same thing that we're asking a lot of these folks in county government. When folks are critical of creating positions, I don't create them willy-nilly. It's because there's a need for that manpower under that same paradigm of that, through that lens of shoveling gravel, whether it's shoveling gravel or processing tax claims or doing reassessments and things of that nature. You need to have the manpower to be able to support that mission.
But this one is, this is more brass. Do we need more boots on the ground, or do we need more brass?
What you need to understand is, is these folks, every single one of them are working supervisors. So even the guy that runs our tax assessment, tax claim office, tax assessments, they do assessments, they're essentially the brain that's driving the machine, you know, and it's a very, I mean, if you look at the work that's done, I mean, take even just appeals, you know, somebody says, hey, I'm going to appeal the value of this. Like, it takes people to do that.
Sure.
You know, the courts, you know, they need their stuff, the tax assessment needs their stuff. You know, there's stuff that comes in for these offices that they got to do. And without the appropriate manpower, you're failing your mission, you know, or you're disproportionately burdening people and we're not getting our job done as quickly. So, I mean, to me, at the end of the day, this is about serving the taxpayers. And, you know, there might be critical information that taxpayers out there need, and if we can't get it to them, say, oh yeah, we'll get that to you next month. Well, that just might not work for what they need it for.
Does the I mean, that's a whole other story, but does the county have metrics on customer service levels of, you know, if somebody had an inquiry in the tax office or what any number of places, is there a built-in expectation of when they could get a response?
So there isn't, but I mean, I'll tell you what, that's the beautiful thing about our GIS and our data department is that's something. So we just recently hired our GIS coordinator, another new position, but it's my goal. And, you know, basically that's my mission that I gave this individual. I said, you know, when you come on board, the one that we hired that came through the interview process, I was like, I want to know everything that there is to know about our county and about the services and how we offer and deliver them based on data. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't improve a process until you know where you're at.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and that's why I said, if you're not making decisions based on data, you're getting it wrong more often than you're getting it right.
Now, let's be clear here that there are legislated minimums, like in OCY. If there's...
Absolutely.
I just want to make sure people understand.
No. I mean, I think...
This is more on 100%. The non-emergency level, yeah.
Non-emergency stuff. I thought, like, when you're talking about, like, tax claims
or inquiries. No, but look at how big the county is. The county does so many different things.
It is vast. It is absolutely massive. I mean, yeah. I discover new things every day.
Yeah. Yeah, so just to be clear, the emergencies are handled as emergencies. All right, one more position, then we'll talk about some of the projects that you're not big on. The elimination of the IT position in Department of Human Services, do they already have IT support there?
So they do. So this is what's, and again, this is the dangers of a part-time counsel, you know, is this position is 100% funded.
Okay.
You know, it's not costing the taxpayers anything, and it's a cybersecurity position. So, I mean, I was just out in Microsoft in Seattle a couple of days ago, and I visited their cybersecurity facility. And, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And, I mean, it's kind of scary. You know, it's kind of like the health videos that they showed you in school about, like, you know.
Don't do drugs, yeah.
Don't do drugs, you know. You know, safe practices and those things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you see all the things and the hundreds and thousands of attacks that occur every day, you know, and a lot of them are coming from Eastern Europe, Ukraine, Russia, places of that nature. But, you know, one cyber attack, there's actually a county that I talked to that was currently under a cyber attack where they got all their information and they held it ransom. And they're actually going to end up stroking a check for several hundred thousand dollars.
That's disgusting.
And send it overseas just to get their stuff back.
Wow.
And to me, just hearing that, and these are things that we've taken seriously, cybersecurity is a big threat, but now is not a time to take cybersecurity lightly. I mean, what do they say, that like an ounce is, you know, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of the cure?
Yep.
You know, this is one of those instances, but again, this is fully funded through the state mm-hmm. and DHS, so why on earth would you turn away essentially a free position to Erie County taxpayers? And the only explanation is you don't know what the heck you're voting on.
Wow. Brenton Davis, the county executive, is our guest here on the Joel Natale Show. All right. So you are vetoing $750,000 in ARPA money administered from the Erie County Redevelopment Authority for a Savakio Park. Now, my understanding was that Tina Mangine's outfit took over Savakio Park, right? You're saying that they don't need the money?
Well, I mean, to me, my first argument against this is look at how this is coming before council to be voted on.
Okay.
So Mary Rennie, Councilwoman Rennie, submitted an action sheet to willy-nilly throw $750,000 of American Rescue Plan money out into the budget. Now, she was the biggest critic against Project Resolve that consistently for the last 9-10 months... said there wasn't enough details. It's vague. Now, this is supported by, you know, a major university, went through an EDA, Build Back Better grant. I mean, you couldn't find a more vetted program if you tried.
Iraq P grant.
Yeah, I mean, right. Iraq P grant with the state. You know, I mean, this initiative for Resolve has seen more due diligence than probably anything we've seen in recent years, if not ever. And to call that vague, and then to turn around and throw a single one sentence up for Savakio Park that didn't come with any kind of information. It didn't come with any kind of, I mean, it was literally nothing but words written on an action sheet, a sentence long, Savakio Park, $750,000. I don't think that's prudent. You know, where's the public deliberation? You know, how are we leveraging these dollars? You know, I mean, that's my first criticism, that it's, again, it's that double standard that Councilwoman Rennie has put forward to play politics. Yeah, I mean, you could see it in every single action sheet that she submitted was pumping money out to the cronies and boards and authorities and commissions and basically just trying to push the money politically to get it away from my administration's ability to influence it. And to me, that's not what it should be about. It should be about data-driven decisions. Now, I requested information from Tina on Savakio Park. She sent me, you know, maybe an 8 or 9 page PowerPoint that was from a company that does this fish farming. And, you know, okay, well, 11 jobs is what this is estimated to create. So, I mean, you're talking a cost of $62,500 per job. I mean, one, that's high. Number two, it's in a new industry that has absolutely no connection to Erie. They mentioned Curtsy, like, oh, yeah, Curtsy's going to buy all this. So I called up Bruce Kern, and we had a conversation. He says, well, of course I want to support the community, but this will be about 0.2% of our business. You're talking 0.2% of Curtsy's business. You know, I love the fact that Curtsy wants to support something. Yeah. You know, I mean, that they're great community partners. But a lot of times I've found in politics that a lot of these entities get private businesses involved by arm twisting. And we can see it with the Eastside Renaissance and Erie Insurance. You know, we can see it again here with Curtsy. It's no business wants to be the boogeyman or the bad guy and say, this probably isn't for us. You know, so I mean, I think that's my role in government to kind of step in and say, hey, does this really make sense? You know, $62,500 for 11 jobs. Yeah. And then what does a fish tank attendant pay anyway? You know, I mean, let's call it what it is. You know, if we have $750,000, I would rather invest in our community college with, say, for instance, a program we're working on now with the three healthcare systems. Mm-hmm. You know, I brought all three healthcare systems to the table. When are you going to get three competitors? They're going to work together to create a training pipeline they all can draw from in partnership with the county government. I would rather use that $750,000 to support the health demand, the high demand on our healthcare for high demand jobs that actually exist that pay a livable wage. And it's not just, hey, these 11 jobs are filled. Well, now what?
What happened to Savakio Park? Because I thought that the Minority Investment Coalition had taken that over.
So they still, I guess, own it.
Okay.
So the MCIC owns the park, but then now it's going to be managed by the Redevelopment Authority. Yeah. I guess to me, it's for the, and I look at it, once you build something, you look at
That was a former Superfund site, right? I mean, that had all kinds of junk in the ground that they had to mitigate. And
So you look at like these cities, and I hear it from these other executives in places where, like, essentially they've filled the ground. They don't have any vacant space. So once you fill ground, it's no longer available. Mm. So we need to be really mindful. You know, look at our bayfront. Like, if we're not deliberate with that, once you develop it, you're going to have to tear something down to redevelop it, and that just doesn't make sense. So to me, I look at Savakio Park in close proximity that it could be to, we have the 12th Street Industrial Corridor on the east side, but it's also closely connected to the rail lines. It's closely connected to the Penn State Barron Initiative. So, I mean, to me, I would rather see that land there as a tool for us to develop for a very deliberate, mindful initiative that we could market to the private sector to say, hey, listen, here's your workforce. Let's train these folks. Mm. You know, let's use this $750,000 deliberately to feed people for generations. I mean, like, literally, and I mean, no pun intended, but teach a man to fish, right, you know what I mean? Not pull it from a barrel, I guess.
And don't forget, we need EMTs, we need teachers, we need all these frontline workers. Police officers.
The first tranche of county money actually included free training for EMTs and paramedics in that field. So we still have grant money available for folks that want to become, you know, EMTs and paramedics, I mean, at no cost. So, I mean, we're working to really solve this workforce gap. But to me, this $750,000 use for hydroponics in a fish tank, like, this is not going to change anybody's lives, you know, and that is my, I guess, most logical argument behind it. Okay. It feels good, but it doesn't necessarily make sense. We need to really be responsible with this $750,000. We create a program and build the infrastructure for something that can be a force multiplier for hundreds or even thousands over a decade or more. with that money. And that's the way we need to be looking with it.
I'm down to my last couple minutes here. 30 seconds on you don't want to channel money through ECRA, $3 million for Building Better Future or $737,000 for the Beehive. You'd rather just tranche that out directly from the county?
So, I mean, to me, I mean, what's, I mean, like in business, again, I'll take it back to my time as being a contractor. I mean, who likes a middleman? You know, what on earth does it make sense for us to give money to ECRA to turn around and dole it out to Gannon? Gannon and the folks at the Beehive, no matter where you look, to my knowledge, have been very responsible in, I mean, they're force multipliers in terms of the money and collaboration. Like, those folks don't need ECRA's oversight. You know, that's why we have our planning department. We have grant coordinators and grant supervisors down there that can administer these grants at no cost to a taxpayer. I mean, if I told you, hey, I mean, this person can give you $100,000 or it can go to this person and we can give you $72,500. Well, of course, you're going to want the full amount. And that's the way we need to be looking at it. You know, we don't need to be taking administrative fees off the top. And even if you don't take an administrative fee off the top, what sense does it have to have an authority involved in something that has no business being involved in it in the first place? So, I mean, to me, I'm all about directly funding. And I think that's the big thing, the big takeaway from this budget that we learned this year is that I want to see more direct funding of our senior centers. I want to see more direct funding, you know, from county government to these places as opposed to them going through a bunch of pass-throughs. Like, we can hold them accountable. But also it gives each of these community centers and the senior centers these the ability to spend money where they need it, okay. The flexibility to spend it how and when they need to spend it, because they're on the ground. They're the ones completing the mission, you know. So, I mean, that's a big goal of mine is to really start hammering through this red tape and all this. I mean, we've got 42 boards, authorities, and commissions. Mm-hmm. For what? You know, we need to start combining. I mean, you look any other places, the port, the airport, the transportation authorities, they're all one entity. You know, why are we going four different directions? You know, so, I mean, that's really my goal for this term is to start looking at these duplication of services. Where can we eliminate some of these boards, authorities, and commissions? Where can we combine them? Where can we strengthen our community? You know, we shouldn't have 42 different boards, authorities, and commissions under county government. I mean, there might even be more than that. But, I mean, 42 is the count that I last had. So to me, we have vacant boards, authorities, and commissions that kind of really just don't do anything. Well, maybe it's time that they served a purpose when they needed to, but it's time to start cleaning up our books. Okay. You know, really re-envisioning how government should work for the people and how we can build a community that's impactful and generational and a place that our kids and grandkids want to stay and live.
I'm going to take a pause here and catch up with you after the top of the hour news break, because we have to go one more segment, and we're going to just ask you stay with us here on Talk Erie. All right, I'm just going to jump, do 2 minutes mm-hmm. on, but I'm going to be out of time if I don't do that. All right, Bretton Davis is with us here on Talk Erie. Here's the headline from Go Erie. Erie Bishop, other community leaders call for Brenton Davis's resignation over the DEI stance. That was November 15th. We did talk to Bishop Brock. He says you won't talk to anybody over the DEI commission. Have you had conversations? Have you tried to work with the commission? I mean, it's a duly enacted commission, you know?
I mean, I'd say that's funny. I mean, I can't speak to what his words are, but if you're telling me he said I won't talk to anybody, I'll tell him he's full of crap. You know, I mean, I sat down with Gerald Blanks and Bishop Brock. I sat down with Gerald 3 different times. I sat down with Bishop Brock twice out of those 3 times.
Are you listening to them?
Well, there's a big difference between listening to somebody. I can listen, but I don't have to agree. So let me tell you the reality of this situation. You know, we've got gatekeepers in this community. We've got gatekeepers that have consistently controlled how and where the money is going. So I'm a threat to these gatekeepers in this status quo. So they thought they could bully me. They thought they could scare me with threats of protests and my resignation. Well, they found out that's not going to work. They've got nothing left. So, I mean, this is the reality. You know, you've got so-called pastors, you know, using the cloth of the church to further a political agenda. You know, you've got individuals that consistently want to you know, use bully tactics to get what they want. Well, they found out they got the wrong one. I'm not backing down to that. You know, you're not going to bully me. You know, you're not going to take them. And if you look at this so-called community leaders, well, look at the who's who that's there. You know, you've got several individuals that stand to profit from this money going out, them or their organizations. And then you got a few failed politicians. And then you got city councilwoman Liz Allen. Well, okay. She's wrote letters in support of DEI. You know, we had three city council members and the mayor show up in county council chambers supporting the DEI, saying that we should fund it. Well, that's great. We did fund it for $4.5 million with ECRA and RDA investments on top of $3.5 million. Well, what does the city put into that? Zero. I find it ironic. You've got a mayor and you've got at least three council members, some of which are actively asking council members for a seat at the table on that commission. Well, that Ordinance 72 was created that if the city of Erie committed an equal or greater amount, would have seat appointments on this commission as well. So if you want seats, fund it. If this is such a viable commission, fund it. You know, so I mean, to me, that's all this is.
What about the accusation is that Bishop Rob had against you that you're tearing down decades of bridge building that has existed between the African American community and the rest of
Again, I think it comes down to gatekeepers. I mean, and Brock is one of them. You know, I mean, there's not a camera the guy didn't like, and I mean, that's the reality of it. But to me is, I've sat down with the NAACP. I've sat down with other minority pastors. They don't all agree. Matter of fact, the vast majority of them don't agree with him at all and distance themselves from that. So, I mean, to me, there's the perception for the TV cameras and the news media. There's the squeaky wheel that gets the funding in Erie. It's the gatekeeper. You know, and that's just not there. It's in a lot of places. But to me, that's the wrong model for how government should operate. Just because you make noise, you're going to get funded? Wrong answer.
Well, how's
you're going to get funded because it's the right answer.
How's this all going to work out? I mean, because we have a DEI commission. We want it to be functional. We think it could have an important role in the conversation. What's your preferred outcome?
Well, I mean, to me, first, like I said, I gave my commitment for seating a new commission, which we've done. And I mean, unfortunately, we've got these three removed previous commissioners that want to challenge it. Well, now that's holding up the progress this commission could be making. You know, I mean, in the best interest of the community, they should just set it aside, step aside. Those three members of council can appoint new ones, but we've pretty much got the vast majority of this council sitting in the wings, but I won't cede it because I don't want the controversy surrounding this council. Our community deserves better than, you know, seating a commission. Then they're going to say, well, you know, we're not removed. And then you're going to put these new commissioners in an awkward position. It's going to start on the wrong foot again. And I need to protect the future work of this position as the only individual in this county charged with supervising these boards, authorities, and commissions. So to me, it's very important that we start fresh. We start clean. We start with a clean slate, you know, leverage that $3.5-4.5 million that we've given and make it impactful, make it generational, and make it truly diverse and inclusive in the way it was meant to be. And so it's unfortunate. You know, we've got a DEI commission that essentially is all we got to do is vote on them and seat this commission. But, you know, I'm holding all of this, and, you know, I've worked with the chairman and members of council, and, you know, we're kind of just sitting back waiting for this to all come to a decision, or for these three council members to
appoint. What's the driving force of coming to a decision? The courts at this point?
Well, I mean, they would have to sue.
Okay.
You know, and if they want to, I mean, they can't use DEI funds. You know, I was very clear about this. So the current attorney that they hired, you know, is from the eastern part of state, conservative that ran for judge. Mm-hmm. But the irony is they're using DEI funds to pay for this. So to me, and I was very clear with them, I told Gary Lee, I said, listen, I said, if any of these commissioners move money after being removed, that's no different than being fired from a job and you putting money on a credit card for a company you no longer work for. That's theft. I said, I'll charge them in full. I will charge them under the full extent of the law. You know, and that's unfortunate because you've got three upstanding members of the community that are making political choices that could have criminal consequences.
Is there a way to get this, the temperature of this conflict down?
Well, that's kind of what we've done. You know, I've talked, you know, as much as they say that we don't, I mean, we've talked until we're blue in the face.
Okay.
I mean, I've had conversations with Gerald Blanks, Bishop Brock. I had a conversation with former Chairman Levitt, telling her exactly, this is what we need to do to lower the temperature in the room. Hit the pause button. Let us work through all this. Don't send any of this money out the door. Don't vote on any new officers. There's only four of you out of a 9-member commission. You shouldn't be conducting business anyway. And they went ahead and did the exact opposite of what I told them to do. You know, and to me, the biggest take home from this is they're shocked at every turn that when I give a warning and it's not heeded, I'm going to do exactly what I said I'm going to do. And there shouldn't be any surprise. Like, I don't pull any punches. You know, I don't play backdoor politics. I've looked every single one of these individuals in the face and told them, this is what is right. This is what is best for taxpayers. And should you step outside this line, these are the consequences. You know, I told them all the removals. I literally told Gerald Blanks, even before these removals started, help me help you. Just step back from taking this money and let's move. But they wouldn't let go of the funding. You know, to me, I talk about, the King Solomon aspect of this. Like I said to them, I told that to him. I told them that to Bishop Brock. I was like, let go of the baby. Just let it go. But like, to me, we all know how that story ends, you know, and it's not that I won't talk. I've talked several times. What it is they don't accept the answer that we just simply do not agree. I don't believe these entities should be funded. The whole thing just looks completely dirty and wrong from the beginning. You know, how can taxpayers have faith in a process or an organization that doesn't operate appropriately and free from conflicts or the perception thereof? You know, I'm not going to back down on that. You know, I've done a lot of talking. I mean, probably more than I should have. And I did my due diligence there and I'll stand behind it. But, you know, I mean, I think just let that be a warning. Like, I do what I say, and I say what I'm going to do.
County Executive Brenton Davis, if someone wants to kind of weigh in and share their thoughts to you, what's a good email for them?
I mean, they can go right to the county website. So, I mean, we have that all
you
set
that,
up. Absolutely.
Contact the county executive.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, so we have that, but then we also opened our portals for anybody that wants to participate and throw their resume into the hat for the board's authorities and commissions. You know, to me, I did that. I mean, that was part of getting the everyday person. I truly believe I am that everyday person. You know, I'm that person that came randomly off the sidelines and decided to get involved. If I can do it, you can do it. You know, so to me, I wanted to work really hard to eliminate the status quo, the political who's who, and, you know, give that opportunity for that random person out there that's got a rock star resume and some experience that's just like that sleeper participant that you're like, wow, where did you come from?
I think there's a lot,
you know,
out there.
And there's a ton of them. Yeah, like, we have such a talented community.
Yeah.
So to me, I want people to have that direct connection right to the top. Submit your resume to me for whatever board authority and commission. And, you know, that way we can at least give you an opportunity to get a look.
I appreciate you taking the time to come on. Really do.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.